Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Cheltimer, and my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed. Each week we visit with a local author, get a glimpse into their work and their lives, find out what prompts them to write. We have an opportunity to hear them read. And this week we're very pleased to welcome Mark Clement. Welcome, Mark. Mark grew up in Cornwall, Ontario, and started writing poetry in high school. His poetry was first published in the school's yearbook. But after he went to college and took up a career in electronics, his work and family took over his life, and he didn't start writing again until the mid-70s. When he retired to Coburg in 2006, he was able to make writing poetry and publishing books for the Coburg Poetry Workshop and the Ontario Poetry Society his life work. Mark, you've said poetry can be seen as a personal diary. What does this phrase mean?
Well, I've always felt that poetry is a personal diary. People use it to express the joys and sorrows of their personal relationships, their interactions with the world in general, as well as their observations and interpretation of the world around them. Not all poetry tells the tale directly. For example, in one poem I wrote, "I write a poem and it is a mirror. I am in disguise, buried in metaphor and convoluted wordplay." Then again, some poetry can be simple and direct, such as this haiku. "Fields of old brown grass soak up the fresh, cool rainfall. Crows sit on a fence." In the end, I think some people write poetry just as some do visual art or music. It is a way to express oneself, and if they free it from the private diary concept and present it to others, it is a way to share their life and look for common experience and feelings.
Very interesting take. Now, the poetry that you write, you've already shown you write on a wide variety of subjects. You also write in many styles?
Yes, this is a difficult question because there are so many styles of poetry, and I guess as you progress, your styles change frequently. Not all poems come into existence the same way. Sometimes a poem will just pop out almost fully developed, as if the mind has been unconsciously building it in the background. Sometimes poems are inspired by an event, an observation or experience. Even a single word can get stuck in your head and you must work to develop it into a poem. For myself, once I start writing a poem, I stick with it until it feels completed. Then comes the editing process, which can take a few minutes, a few hours, weeks, months, even years.
Wow.
I've often looked at older poems and revised them. I sometimes think that such revisions occur because, since the time of writing, I've experienced new things and they seem to fit into the old poem. As to style, most of my poetry is simply free verse. That is, no formal structure or end rhyming. Years ago, I spent every day at my breakfast table studying a poetry book and then challenging myself to write a poem in a specific style, such as a sonnet or a villanelle. Here's a short poem illustrating how an everyday event triggers a poem. Frog on Sidewalk. There's always time to write a poem, to focus on the small things of life, like that frog on the front sidewalk, less than an inch long and living in the universe of our lawn, to feed on creatures invisible to us. He kept still as I paused to look. There are many like this tiny frog, who freeze as large lives pass, who take only what they need and hope they are invisible, hope the grass does not get cut too short. This poem records that this small frog exists, that a large life took note and did not cut the grass that day.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other poems for us today?
Well, I have a few, but the one I would like to read right now is a very long poem. It was written in response. I used to shop here when my wife has passed, and before that, I always did the shopping over here at Metro. Pushed my card around. So this poem is in response to that experience. It's called Grocery Store Poem. I'm looking for a poem, so I go to the grocery store, wrangle a cart from the neatly packed rows, unfold our list of needs, and read the ordered items, and it is not a poem. A lady, to be nice about it, barges ahead of me through the automatic doors. She has no cart, so we'll probably end up at the express checkout. The entrance is at the fruit and vegetable sections, and I think, how easy this would be if I were a vegetarian, a savior of the planet with my sharp canine teeth unused. I pick through the apples and look for clean fruit without bruises. I learned this technique from my wife. She also wrote this list, which is not a poem. I come to the most dreaded item on the list, broccoli. How could anyone imagine that this was really food that humans should eat? Poems on cardboard taste better. I pick up bread and buns, then slowly pass the pies calling from the shelves. I know there are poems in those pies. I can hear the words baked beneath their crust. I sadly wait at the fish counter as the pies quietly mutter their sweet and buttery words. Salmon, I say, and the brown paper-wrapped fish swims with me to the red meat display. Now it should be noted that I hurried through the veggies, those bright red, green, and yellow pages of prose, those crisp words proselytizing about the evils of meat. I wait patiently as an anxious crowd of cholesterol-ridden people pick and poke at the packaged devil meats. My turn comes, and my teeth clench in anticipation. I feel good, having resisted pies full of poems, picked only the best green prose, so I select a package of delicate loin lamb chops and hurry on to the counters filled with cans. My list, which is not a poem, instructs me to pick up peas, beans, and split pea soup. The list is not very spicy, so I continue to the cold and frozen food selections. Butter is bad, so I pick up a substitute spread, a little bit of Oka cheese for the list maker, and finally, I find a poem in the freezer. It's icy cold and creamy, and I want it. With my frozen poem, I proceed firmly to the checkout and wait behind a full cart with enough food for 2 weeks or a family of 12. I'm sure my poem is getting soft. Finally, after the points card is scanned, the credit card swipe pinned and put away, I am greeted and my goodies get tallied. I am worried that my poem will lose its shape. Finally, I rattle the cart across the parking lot, press the button on my magic key fob to unlock the doors of my little red car. My poem is exposed to the warm, sunny day. Backseat loaded, car in gear, I move slowly out of the crowded parking lot. These people, who walk every which way and delay my exit, do not appreciate that I carry a delicate poem. I'm home at last, and my arms stretch as I strong-arm everything at once, knowing that my poem cannot wait, knowing the freezer is sad without its sweet verse. In the kitchen at last, I carefully place my soft, delicate poem in the cool, safe darkness of the refrigerator frozen food compartment. I sigh and exhale my accumulated stress. My wife unpacks and stores the wordless food. "Where's the pie?" she says. "I resisted," I say. "Didn't like their sweet, misleading words." The real poem is in the freezer.
Real tongue-in-cheek, that one. Well, thank you, Mark. And now I think we'll take a short break.